Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 29th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, time once again for our gardening program for the month. And, you know, the last couple of shows, Fred Breglia has been doing a solo performance on the gardening shows. But today, we have reunited the band. The three amigos are here. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and horticulturalist Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery. That's right. Line up right now with those gardening questions. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And you can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. It's gardening, a perfect day for it. What day is not perfect for it? We begin after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and we have with us Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, all here to answer your questions about gardening. Greg runs the show at Ward's Nursery. You're the boss, right?
I actually have a brother, silent brother, who's part of my brother Mike, who's
Harpo?
There all the time. No, he wouldn't appreciate that.
No.
But so it is a partnership there.
Fair enough.
Yes.
And we all know Fred Breglia, who's director of the Landis Arboretum and, by the way, a certified arborist. Bob Graves is horticulturalist, co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. So this is the dream team if you have a gardening question. And the number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Gentlemen, nice to have you all here once again.
It's great to be back.
Thanks.
We've been spending some time together here waiting to go on, and there's been no fighting?
No.
No.
I thought the band had broken up. It was pretty. You're all back. Good. This is great. So a lot of calls already. This one came in via email. We'll start off the show with Kenneth's question. Kenneth wants to know, is it too late to plant arborvitae with winter only a few months away?
The answer to that is absolutely not.
No. Absolutely not.
Nope. Roots will continue to establish themselves until the ground pretty much begins to freeze. And actually, there's advantages, especially with really dry summers the way we went through, to plant in the fall.
Get some roots established now before it gets hot next year.
Exactly. It'll be easier for them to keep it watered. So
how late is too late for that?
You know, I've planted trees as late as Halloween and had absolutely no problems on any of the ones that I've installed.
We've even done things when it starts to freeze. Deciduous stuff is better, and you get into December, but evergreens and certainly up into November, we'd be okay.
Yeah, there is. I mean, you name the plant, we'll sort of tell you if it's a good idea or not so good to plant in the fall, but arborvitae are probably top of the list for, as an evergreen, especially.
Yep. Perfect. Okay.
And most things safe until probably at least mid to late October.
All right. So you ready for some calls here?
Let's do it.
Let's do this thing. Edward in Loudonville. Edward, you're first.
Hello. I'm trying to deal with some what I consider invasive species, and I'm trying to figure out how to get rid of them without digging the roots down to 2 or 3 feet to get rid of them. And among them being lilies of the valley, some sort of, I think they call it Japanese bamboo, a climbing vine that will twist around trees, and also yucca plants.
Yuckas. Okay. Well, you know, some of those things are easier than others to control. Some of them are woody plants, and some of them are not. But the woody plants, I guess I'll address those guys, and then you guys can have at the others. The woody plants, you really want to try to cut them after they use stored energy to leaf out, and the best time is spring. Because right now, the woody plants are going to actually be storing energy in the root systems. So by cutting the stems, there's already quite a bit of energy stored for this coming spring already in that root system of those woody plants. So any woody plant, anything from an invasive to just an unwanted woody plant, can easily be taken out. Springtime, you wait for them to leaf out and use all the stored energy, and then you cut them before they really have a chance to sit there and photosynthesize.
And with that, Fred, you think it'll take multiple years sometimes to
You know, I've had really good luck if you time it really good with just you cut it that one shot, it'll send up almost always a secondary survival mechanism growth. Cut it again, and then sometimes there's not much, even a third. If there is, other things, they'll take a little bit more.
I would just throw in a couple things. One would be that if you have an area you want to clear and really get rid of it, you can hire people to excavate that area and work out all of the plants that are not desirable.
It depends on how much time you have, I guess.
It's only, or and money if you're going to hire someone with a machine. So that, but that would take care of the problem within, you know, the time allotted, a day or two. They'd have it cleared, rake it off, seed it, and everything would be gone. And so I just wanted to say that. But the I missed the fourth plant, Lily of the Valley, bittersweet, it sounded like,
yucca.
Right? And then, or maybe the first plant, or second plant.
He had Japanese knotweed.
He had Japanese knotweed in there. And Lily of the Valley he had as well.
Lily of the Valley can scoop out. That's fairly shallow.
So, yeah, Lily of the Valley is a sought-after perennial. Yeah. So that one you'd have probably no problem giving away for free. Easy to scoop out.
Get somebody else to dig it out for you.
And then
and the yucca would also be another easy one to get rid of. You can literally transplant that out and give it away. You could probably sell it, actually, and find something.
But the problem is the root systems are so deep. I mean, I can go down 3 feet and still find root ends for the yucca plant. But the bamboo is the biggest problem.
Yeah, that's a bigger one.
And so all those items, once you cut them down fairly close to the ground, could also be mowed after that. Even, you know, the bittersweet being the stumpiest thing if it's been there a long time. But if you can get that all to, you know, an inch above grade or less, then mowing that area afterwards would eventually eliminate all of them.
Yeah, if you have the ability to mow, everything that you just mentioned will not survive continuous mowing.
All right, Edward, thanks a lot. We'll go over to Carrie in Plainfield. Carrie, you're on.
My favorite Vox Pop show. This week I'm going to get my soil ready for next year's garden, and mostly what I have in the garden is garlic. And I've recommended, you know, I've read that, it's recommended that, and especially for garlic, you should amend the soil with 2 inches of compost, which I consider compost to be rotted vegetation. The question is, instead of using compost, would cow manure be, could I use that instead of compost?
Is
there one advantage over another?
Cow manure.
Composted cow manure
would essentially be the same thing.
It would be the same thing?
It would have a higher nutrient value, so there'd be more available.
The manure would?
Correct. But not if it's composted, officially composted, it would be great.
It's also good to add that to your compost, so the manure actually could go into the compost and mix
put
with all
together.
The vegetable scraps, and it actually
provides
works
a nitrogen
really
source to speed the breakdown.
Sure it does. Yep. You will get perhaps a little bit more weed seed if it's not completely composted, though, especially the manure.
Okay. Thanks a lot, guys.
Carrie. We appreciate the call. Over to Elizabeth in Albany. Elizabeth, you're on.
Hello. I'm calling because I'm a member in a community garden. And we're all having problem with our basil. It seems to we'll plant basil or grow it from seed, and then overnight it turns yellow. And I think it might be something called fusarium. I'm not sure if that's what it is, but it's pervasive. Everybody who plants basil has the problem. And I just wonder, is there how to deal with it?
Okay. That's usually a disease called downy mildew, I believe.
Which is the common name, and I'm blanking on the genus, which would be what fusarium could be. But either way, we've had a pretty significant downy mildew issue in South Berkshire County. From wherever you're calling from, over those last couple of years, it's fairly devastating to basil. So not planting it in the same location is really...
Some varieties are more susceptible than others. There's a lot of varieties of basil. Yeah.
The African blue seems to be pretty tough. Some of the unusual varieties are good, but your standard sweet basil has been...
And they're particularly... that problem occurs more when you have changes in temperature. When you have a spring like we had this year, when later in the season it was warm during the day and cold at night. And, of course, basil does not like to be cold at all. Anything in near 50 degrees causes you real problems with basil.
What does downy mildew look like?
So you have the plant looks good. You have a yellowing of the plant. If you look under the leaf of those yellow leaves, you'll see sort of a gray, white, dusty spore structures forming.
Can you just wipe it off?
No, it's actually attached to the plant. It's actually taking energy from the plant. It's really best to try to rotate. That soil now is somewhat contaminated, can be for a couple of years. So if you can be planting your basil, and in a community garden, that's kind of tricky. because everyone mm-hmm. is close
and it's
by.
Airborne too. I mean, it'll
yeah.
move.
If yeah. you can plant it in a different location, if you can consider maybe doing it in a container at home for the next year to sort of let it settle out, those are the kinds of recommendations. There are fungicides, but it's your basil, so do you really yeah. want to do that?
Yeah, sometimes mm-hmm. with dry summers, powdery mildew is one of these. Usually you expect fungal problems to be occurring during wet areas, but this powdery mildews can occur during wet times. But sometimes during dry summers, the spores are able to stay on those leaves longer,
yeah.
so they affect it more. So one natural control, although it's not going to help much now, but going through the season, is to actually use a hose with a sprayer and actually spray those leaves off.
Yeah.
And if you're getting normal rain, a lot of times that will normally just take a lot of those spores off, and you get less powdery mildew sometimes during wet years. Dry years enables those spores to just stay there and sort of do what they like to
and
do.
That,
which is
powdery great. Mildew is a little different than that downy mildew. So it's not something I think that would be effective on downy mildew.
So right, you say downy. It's in the soil. So if you had the wherewithal, if you had the necessary gear, could you take that soil and zap it with ultraviolet and then make it okay again?
Yeah, you know, sterilizing soil is tough. When you're really seriously doing it, you cook it. We used to make potting soil years ago for all our materials, and you had a great big almost oven that you put it in, and it's very difficult to sterilize soil. It's not really practical.
You also take all the good with the bad.
Yeah.
It's really best to not plant it in that location, allow those spores, that area yep. to sort of go dormant, you know, maybe a cover
yeah,
crop.
Yeah, Greg's suggestion is with basil is put it in a pot.
Yeah.
So I've had great luck that way. Yeah.
And we did that too. Yeah. And I think it attracted a certain kind of caterpillar.
Your basil?
Okay. Yeah.
It really well
and
might
it, have. It, which made the most beautiful moth. It okay. was like one that was only attracted to basil. I'm not, or maybe I'm having one of those hallucinatory moments, but I think it's true. All right, Deb, we'll take a break here. They're laughing at me, Zach, so it's perfect time to take a break for underwriting. Yes, it's Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Chesterwood, presents the Nature of Glass, an outdoor contemporary sculpture exhibition curated by Jim Shantz, featuring artists incorporating glass in their sculptural work, extended until October 10th. Chesterwood.org for details. Interactive Media Consulting, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing logo and print design, web development, and digital marketing throughout the capital region and beyond, marketing creative and business ideas since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 50 years, offering indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, organic fertilizer, and advice, HadleyGardenCenter.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001, StoneSoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. And Adams Ferricker Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger, local Hudson Valley apples and vegetables, Adams Grown Mums, and more. AdamsFarms.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It's the Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward join us. And once again, the number is 800-348-2551. Lines are loaded at the moment. If you hear somebody hang up, that would be a good time to call. This one came in via email before we get back to the phones. This is from regular correspondent Bonnie, who says, power company cut down several evergreens crowding their line 20 feet from the road. Now we can see every car going by. We'd like to plant an 8-foot-high screen, but it has to block in winter as well. Problem is, they'd like to have blooms. Don't know of anything like that, do you? And that's from Bonnie.
Not in the Northeast. Something evergreen and blooming 8 feet tall.
Leave it to Bonnie to be troublesome.
Sunny location. Now, so technically, rhododendron could grow to 8 feet tall, but not typically a plant you would recommend.
Not something you'd put out by the road and for visual screening in this part of the
world. A good
one,
but it's not going to work in the winter in terms of like having a real impact, is honestly common lilac. I really like common lilac for hedging. It gets 8 feet, 10 feet tall.
Some of the paniculata hydrangeas, like the PGs, would work. But you know, if it's evergreen,
it'll give you blooms. It'll give you everything you want, but it won't give you evergreens.
There's some viburnums also bloom 8 feet tall. That would be very trouble-free. The arborvitae that we mentioned in the beginning would be nice, evergreen, easily kept at 8 feet. You would have to prune it.
Maybe a combination.
But no bloom, so I was going to say maybe a combination, You could actually, and I've seen that done too, where you actually kind of do a double row, you stagger them, mix them up. You put some evergreens in there, you get some blooming in there.
Well, you just take the arborvitaes, you put some plastic flowers in it.
Well, that is another option.
No, it's not good. All right, boy, I'm batting 1,000. All right, let's go to David in Johnstown. David, you're on.
Hi. Last year I got 3 jars of raspberry jam off the plants. This year no berries came up. Is there some reason? Is it the drought or what? Or just...
I actually heard raspberries did well this year. Raspberries, blueberries.
Oh, my God. Yep, really?
I'm sorry to say that, but raspberries, blueberries
did, really
did quite well. I would say maybe if these are late, fall blooming or fall fruiting raspberries, summer blooming raspberries, maybe they didn't do so well because of the drought, because it was very dry near the end. But certainly the July crop was good.
Did you cut them back at all?
No. What am I supposed to do?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You want me to do that one?
Go ahead.
So it's which kind? Do you know which kind of raspberries you have?
No, I don't know. They're juicy.
And do you know when they normally are ripe, when the fruit is usually ready for you?
It was twice last year, I thought.
Oh, great. Perfect. Okay. So you have twice-bearing raspberries.
Oh, yeah.
So bear with me now. It gets confusing even for me.
I'll just take a nap.
So right now, if you look at any younger shoots, the ones that came up this year, they're usually still sort of a whitish green on the stem, maybe just starting to turn red. They may have flowered a little bit this summer, and you might see some poor fruit set or something right now in September. Those you're going to leave alone for the minute. Don't touch those.
Yeah.
All the other ones, the canes are brown, they're woody, maybe the bark's peely. They should have flowered in May and fruited in July. Those you're going to cut out. Take every single one of them.
In what sense cut out? Cut
right
down
to the ground.
Take them, great.
Take them right down. So you take all those out, and you could do that today. There's no reason to
wait.
You can do it. You could do it next week or month. There's no hurry. They're going to be dead in the spring anyway, and you want to get them out of there.
Okay.
The only other thing.
Do I have to yank them out or
Cut. Prune. Just cut them with a pruner.
Prune. Okay. Thank you very much.
Then just take a look at when you're done with that. Not until you're done. Yeah. Take a look at all those ones you left, and you can take about 8 or 10 inches off the top of each one.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much.
Hey, David, thanks a lot. A satisfied customer. How about that? Jay in North Pownell, Vermont. Jay, you're on.
Hello, fellas. This is great. This isn't a question for you, but I'm doing something rather extreme here, kind of as a research project. And due to the strange weather, which gets stranger every year, as you've noticed, I am planting. I started on the 27th of last month, and I just put in another crop of radishes. The ones I put in 4 weeks ago are just about ready to harvest. I've got 150 feet of those interspersed with 150 feet of carrots. The carrots aren't doing so well, which doesn't surprise me due to the less sunlight per day, and also the cloudiness we've had, but the radishes are just blooming. And this afternoon I'm going to put in one last crop of spinach mustard. The ones I put in 3 weeks ago, I just started harvesting a week ago. Only the moles got into them, so 200 feet away I'm going to put in another crop. This is very odd for this time of year, I understand. I also put in... bush beans, 16 plants on the 22nd, 12 days ago. The first one showed this morning. I had soaked them first overnight and then paper towel them for 3 days.
Do you have a question?
I've got,
okay. Let's cut to the chase.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
And what's the question?
Oh, I thought you said you had a question.
No, well, no. Do you have a question?
I'm wondering what your question is.
Otherwise, the show will be gone.
Okay. Well, all right. What do you guys think about somebody planning like this? Am I a maniac? Or, like I said, it's all research.
Yeah, so we.
Seeds I needed to use.
We have in our. At our store now, we are offering started already. So these seeds were sown closer to the 1st of September, maybe a little before. Some lettuce, some arugula, some Swiss chard, all things that will take the cold weather quite nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Those beans are warm weather plants, and there's just no way, you know, you're going to get a crop out of those. You know, it's not just the day length, it's the temperature. The carrots, if you planted carrots back in July and they're looking okay now, they'll do some growing. You're going to have some nice expansion on those carrots through October as long as it, you know, doesn't get too chilly, which it hasn't lately in these Octobers.
And that's then, what I figured. Yep.
You know, and then so any of those leafy things you planted, you know, the radishes only take 30 days anyway, so you could try another round of radishes.
Okay.
But we're at the end. Garlic is the thing
that's
to plant
thing.
Now.
Matter of fact, last evening, as soon as I got done with the radishes, I put in 16 garlic cloves.
There you
Perfect.
Go. Cool.
Thank you so much for the advice on the basil. Now I know what happened to mine. I planted them in the same place as last year, and guess what? That's not happening next year.
All
okay,
right.
Thank you, folks.
Well, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call, Jay, and let's move on here and go on over to Marie in Poughkeepsie. Marie, you're on.
Hi there. A quick comment about the last caller. I've been using Elliott Coleman's Four Season Harvesting for years, and there are tons of greens that I plant August through now, including kale, that I cover in winter and harvest. But my question today, though, is I have a patio pond. It's kind of not really gardening, but it is. And this year, I have a frog that showed up from nowhere. There's nowhere in my garden for this frog to overwinter because it's an artificial pond with, like, no shore or anything. Mm. Should I kindly relocate it to a pond?
Oh, boy. Well, let's see if we'll test the expertise of our gardeners here today. What do you think, boys?
I don't know you know, whether it would survive in your pond probably depends on how deep it is.
How
whether,
deep it is.
Whether it would freeze, whether there's a little sort of, if you have a liner and you've left all the muck at the bottom of the pond where it could sort of nestle into that stuff. This is all, you know, I'm pretty sure not going to happen for, you know, several more weeks to a month or more. However, yes, if you probably could scoop it up, it probably would appreciate it, though it might not know it now, being in a larger pond.
Yeah,
there
depends,
you go.
Depends a lot on what the winter does to us, too. We just don't know.
Yeah. All right.
Perfect. I just didn't want to, you know, it's like, oh, no, you're dooming it to death by doing that. Okay, I will give it a try.
Yeah, pick a similar
Thank
location.
You.
Thanks, Marie. We appreciate it. And 800-348-2551 is our number. Billy in Poughkeepsie. Billy, you're on.
Hey, guys. I have a grapevine that I went and dug up from someone's house. They were getting rid of it. It's more of like a probably about 3.5 foot tall and bushy. It was bearing fruit at the time we dug it up, and it was about 4 years old, they told us. We brought it immediately home with all of the roots that we could get out and replanted it immediately in fruit and vegetable potting soil. Within a few days, the leaves started to turn, and the entire thing appears to have died within weeks, despite regular watering.
This happened,
we picked it up about 6 weeks ago. So at this point, I don't know whether to trim it back, whether to leave it and hope something comes back next year, or just tear it out, it's gone.
Well, you never want to move something when it's under maximum stress. And when it's got leaves on it and it's got fruit on it, you could not pick a worse time to move it. So you like to move things when they don't have leaves on them, either in the spring or in the fall, for deciduous items. You know, you have nothing to lose at this point to leave it where it is. But I wouldn't feel bad if it doesn't come back in the spring.
Okay. Yeah, it was the sort of thing where either come get it today or
right.
we're tearing it out.
You had no choice.
We got it. And
it's worth a shot. It's
I don't know.
A
would
shot.
You would and you guys recommend trimming it back at this point or just leave it alone?
I would leave it alone. Yeah. I would. You know, if you want to know if it's alive right now, the scratch test, then I would start at the top and take your thumbnail and just go under the bark a little bit and see if you see any green under the bark. If you do, It has a shot. Yep. If you don't, you know, you work your way down the stem, and if you get to the bottom without seeing any green, then it's done already.
Yeah, right. I mean, there might be some energy in the roots, but either way, cutting it, if it's brown, it's not coming back. That part we know for sure. And then, you know, it might sprout a little bit from the root system, but it doesn't sound likely.
Doesn't sound good.
But hey, leave it till spring.
Got nothing to lose.
It's the Vox Pop Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves, along with yours truly, Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551 at Bill in Hyde Park. Bill. Well, that was nice. Bill, are you still there? Oh, Bill, you waited all that time, and then we got to you, and you hung up. Kathy and Troy. Kathy.
Hello. How are you guys today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
I have a question about my begonias. I have two begonias in a pot. I don't know if they're tuberous or rhizotomatous, but they're in that bonfire series.
Okay.
One of them is fine. The other one stopped blooming. And the leaves, the terminal leaves that are coming out, are very small and twisted and very deformed. Do you have any idea what's going on?
No.
Could be Chris.
Wow.
You said the leaves are deformed?
Yes.
Yep. Well, if you see a leaf that's kind of like twisted and deformed, it typically is an insect that has a piercing, sucking mouth part. And it literally acts like a straw. It goes in, and when you think about how you would, like, you know, suck the juice out of like a juice box or one of those Capri Sun type things for kids, it shrivels up and it gets distorted. So, you know, probably aphids or thrips.
I was wondering about the thrips because I can't really see anything on this plant.
What you do is take a cutting off the end of that and get a white piece of paper and sort of flick that leaf with your fingers over the white paper, and they'll fall down onto the white paper. They're very, very small.
Yeah, the thrips are really small.
And in which case you may want to cut them back, and you could use some insecticidal soap, but they're really hard to get because they're hiding in there.
Yep.
Right,
you could use a little magnifying glass as well to help you spot the thrip. The aphid will be easy to see if it's an aphid.
Yes, I'm familiar with aphids, and I don't have that, but whatever these are, I can't see them at all.
Yep.
Sounds like it's the thrips.
You said you wanted to try and winter them, or you're just asking us what's wrong?
Well, actually, they're in a greenhouse.
Yeah, okay.
And I will overwinter them in the greenhouse. I've done that for a couple of years now. I've got them in because it's the end of the season. Yeah. And
I'm
concerned about the other plants in the greenhouse if these are thrips.
You didn't treat them before you brought them in.
I did not.
Yeah, so that's sort of the golden rule of bringing your plants in for the winter and trying to winter is to treat them for the potential of insects before you bring them in. Now still not too late. I mean, I would consider things that are close by to them that are in the greenhouse, treating them as well.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kathy. We appreciate it. Over to Emily in Plainfield, Massachusetts. Emily.
Hi. I've been listening to the Garden Show this season and in the past.
Okay.
And I'm getting a little confused. I want to know about cutting back woody plants and shrubs. There seems to be a time to cut it back if you're trying to kill it, and another time to cut it back if you're trying to resurrect it. And the way he describes it, it sounds all the same to me, so you need to clear this up for me.
It varies a lot depending on what you're pruning.
So when in the spring, when you said when they're up and they leafed out, but they haven't had time to photosynthesize, like about when in the spring is that?
Well, you would be looking at, you know,
Of May.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's May.
You know, it varies a little bit depending on your area, but right around that early May, you know.
Okay, because I cut a rhododendron wanting it to come back, and you had said once it's had fat buds on it, you know.
That would be.
And it's already back up. It's small, but it's up out there now. That felt like spring to me, but it was more like right before summer solstice or right after.
Well, there's two reasons, two times you would cut rhododendrons. The one time, if you were trying to rejuvenate it, in other words, you want to make a new shrub because my shrub got so tall and so lanky, I don't really have any.
Well, it got frosted and it was always sort of crooked and Charlie Brownie, so I decided to try to start over.
So when you try to start over, that's actually done before the plant leaves out. In other words, you're going to cut it before it uses that stored energy. The roots have the stored energy, and that's where it's going to go. It's going to make a new plant.
So when would that have been? Because I think I cut it
I think I already did this, but it's already up and kind of leafy, little guy right now.
I don't. There's two times I would prune a rhododendron. One of them is right after it blooms, and that's more structural pruning or shaping, a little bit of less drastic pruning. But if I have to take the whole shrub away and I want to make a new one, that's going to be in the springtime before the buds actually open onto the deciduous tree. So when you look at all
that's what I did.
Yep,
that's what I did.
In which case, that would have all the stored energy in the root system, and it'll give you a brand new shrub that year. If you wait for those leaves to kind of leaf out onto deciduous plants, then they use that stored energy, and that would be a good time to kill them.
Well, it had leaves. It had buds, but they weren't open. I cut it. I want to say it was right around solstice, but it's back up now. It's a little guy, but I'm thinking in the spring it'll start growing again.
Yeah. Yep. So from this point on that, you would want to wait till after it blooms. So no more of this early stuff with that plant. You want to make it bigger, let it get larger. So if it needs pruning, it would be done after it blooms. Or if it doesn't bloom, it would be after the other plants and its sort of genre type would be blooming.
All right. Emily, thanks a lot for the call. All right. We have a minute and a half here before the next break, and I think we have Bill, who got cut off after waiting all that time. Bill, you got a minute and a half here, buddy. Go ahead.
Okay. I got hydrangeas, 5 bushes. A couple years ago, I had some nice flowers. Now I got the most beautiful green stalks you ever could see. So what do I do now to get them in shape for next year?
All right. It sounds like macrophylla, is what you say, yeah.
And so they can have, be affected by various weather events, winter and spring, and we had plenty of those this last year. So we're recommending that you basically do nothing at this time. Certainly additional applications of fertilizer could wait till spring at this point.
I don't have to fertilize this year or in the fall.
What we're finding with ours, and we say macrophyllas, we're talking about the ones that are generally kind of pinkish or bluish, and they really suffer in the wintertime sometimes. But we're fertilizing them much more heavily than we thought we'd need to, sometimes up to twice a month. And I found with my own this year, I had to cut them right back to the ground, and I've got all this new growth, and they're really starting to flower now because I didn't fertilize them early enough.
Right. But it's too late to really do that again for this season.
Wouldn't do it now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, hey, thanks a lot, and we appreciate you calling back. We're taking a break, but we'll be back with the home stretch of the gardening program. 800-348-2551 is the number. Fred, Bob, Greg, Ray, you, we'll all be back in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, specializing in extra-sharp New York cheddar since 1923, offering imported and domestic specialty cheeses, nostalgic candies, and more. Waterwheelvillage.com. Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, welcoming the community to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur services held at Bernhardt Theater, Skidmore College, October 2nd, 3rd, 11th, and 12th. SaratogaSinai.org for details. Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Painter Edith Huntsberger exhibiting watercolor and acrylic paintings at Paradise City in Northampton, Massachusetts, Columbus Day weekend, booth number 935, edithhuntsberger.artistwebsites.com. And Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring a variety of mums, fall decorations, and bulbs, including organic garlic bulbs for spring, Monday through Saturday, 8 to 5, Sundays, 9 to 4, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. It is The Gardening Show with Bob Graves and Greg Ward and Fred Breglia. And Fred, what's happening at the Landis Arboretum?
Well, we just finished an incredible summer season, and we're getting ready for our fall season now, and actually one of the last fundraising events for Landis Arboretum. It's going to be our annual wine tasting event at the Grapevine Farms outside of Cobeskill. It's going to be on November 11th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m., and members $10, non-members $15, it includes the wines, it includes hors d'oeuvres, it includes unlimited questions for Fred if you happen to be there trees as well. So and it's a great time. What better way to end a season than with a glass of wine?
Will they have deviled eggs?
They usually do.
Okay.
I don't take care of the menu, but I've never complained,
right, well,
so it's been good.
Right,
and also some friends of ours over at the City of Troy, combined with Capital Roots and the Street Tree Advisory Board, are going to be planting 50 trees throughout the City of Troy using funding from a New York State Community Forestry grant. There's going to be a second planting of 50 additional trees to take place in the fall of 2017. And they have asked if you're in the area, you want more information on either possibly how to get a tree or where they're going to go,
sure,
contact Sharon DiLorenzo at trees@capitalroots.org.
Very cool. And Greg Ward, a free clinic, yeah?
I actually have two. One this Saturday. They're at 10 a.m., so one this Saturday at the Garden Center. And it is fall garden problem solving. I actually have a panel very similar to this. You come in with your questions, your answers. What is this weed? When do I plant my garlic, et cetera? And we will solve those for you.
Okay, and that's at Ward's Nursery. And what is the address?
600 Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
All right.
And then the very next weekend, on Saturday the 8th, we have fall bulb basics.
Mm.
If you don't, you're not sure what an allium is or a colchicum, We'll show you what that is. Colchicum.
Colchicum.
We'll tell you how to tell
like
them
an
apart.
Ailment. All right. Well,
also
good.
Also known as autumn crocus.
Never heard of that. All right. That's great. So, and your website is Ward's Nursery.
Oh, wardsnursery.com.
Very good, sir. Yes. And the Landis Arboretum is?
LandisArboretum.org.
Bob, you must have something going you want it's, to...
We have some upcoming seminars. If you go to our website, fadigansnursery.com, you will find them.
Very good. Well, before we hit the lightning round, and we have some time, we'll try to get through as many calls as possible. A couple of email questions here. This one is from Thomas. We planted Brussels sprout at the beginning of summer, and so far they're growing like crazy, but no Brussels sprouts. What's up?
I looked at mine the other day, and they're a little small. I mean, there's little sprouts on there, little Brussels or sprouts. I'm never sure which to call them. They're there, but they're small.
Eternal question.
And you can affect the development of those by topping them. So you actually just nip off an inch or two off the top. You're stopping the plant from continuing to grow and putting all the energy into the Brussels or sprouts. I would consider water. I would still seriously consider irrigation. They're one of those plants that does, they just keep going. Those things are only going to get better as we get into October and even into November. So don't give up on them.
All right. And this one is from, says, thanks. That can't be the name. We'll just say it's from somebody. I'm interested in planting some of the new disease resistant elms. Are they really viable yet? Where can I get some and when should I have them planted?
Yeah, they're absolutely viable. We've got a number of different varieties at the Arboretum that we planted and have never seen any incidences where they've got Dutch elm disease, and they're really commercially available. There's a lot of information online. There's a couple of varieties, I think, that have been tried and true. You guys probably carry some.
Yeah,
of those
we generally have some in the spring.
The Berkshire County has a thing called Elm Watch. A fellow named Tom Zetterstrom runs that, and he has been very proactive in really kind of sorting out these varieties. The latest favorite is Jefferson, but contacted him, I think if you just went to Elm Watch, he probably has a few others.
Okay.
Jefferson seems to be the newest upcoming one that is becoming also available, which
good.
Is nice too.
Yeah. And
great.
That one does have more of a structure of that American elm. The key is there's a lot of varieties that are resistant, but they don't all have that classic
base
shape.
They don't look like elms.
Shape. Jefferson does seem to resemble the elm from what I've seen.
All right, very
well.
Good. This is from Eve. Ground ivy. I have ground ivy in my lawn. I try to avoid weed killer. If this stuff gets in my flower beds, will it ruin my shrubs and perennials? That's from Eve.
I find it to be one of the easier weeds to pull in the garden.
In the garden, you just pull it out.
In the lawn, it's a little tricky.
It's brutal in the lawn.
But in the garden, it comes right up.
All right, and last one, and then we'll get back to the phones from Susan in New Lebanon. Should I transplant the hostas that did not do well this year now or wait until they emerge in spring? I planted a lovely light green hosta. Here's a picture if you want to see it.
It looks pretty good. If it was newly planted, it probably, again, did not gain a lot of size because of our water shortage. Hostas looked pretty good, the established ones, in the spring, but once we got to summer, they kind of did peter out quickly.
Well, she said she planted a lovely light green hosta when it gets too much sun, and they faded and almost looked like they burned.
They do look like that with sun. It won't kill them, but unless it was left there for a long enough period of time where it's just burning them up. But no, that's
transplanting them to a shadier spot is what she's suggesting, yes.
Yeah, all right, about 10 minutes.
Now, right?
Yes.
And they could do that now with the hosta, absolutely.
About 10 minutes left of the show. We'll do a lightning round. We'll try to get through as many of these calls as we can. Deanne in West Sand Lake, you're on.
Hi, is it Am I on?
Yes.
Okay. I have two questions. The one, they're kind of quick, hopefully, but the one is my hydrangeas have not bloomed for like 4 years. And I heard you say to the one person, you know, don't cut them back now. Sometimes I used to try cutting them back, and then I decided that I was cutting off the buds. Is there anything you recommend for helping them to grow?
Well, you know, there's a few different varieties of hydrangeas, and some of them get pruned at different times. And I will say, because I know we're running out of time, there's a really great resource called Hydrangeas, hydrangeas.com. It's free. It's all about hydrangeas, and it literally has nothing else on it except for hydrangea questions.
It's less about pruning and more about fertilizing starting in the spring.
And we're pretty sure it's the same one, that it's that macrophylla type. So we don't like you to prune them because the bud set is all already there. However, if we get some really cold weather late in the spring when the new growth has already emerged, those are the flower buds as well, can get damaged. So then it starts to regrow. At that point, pruning it would be the way to deal with that.
Yep.
But as Bob's been saying, fertilizing the plant so that they are very aggressive at growing and being able to rebloom later in the spring, summer is what we're suggesting.
Mine died right to the ground, and they grew up to about 5 feet, and they're just starting to bloom.
Yep. Okay. And if you have an option to try to shelter them a little bit with some burlap screening, if that's an application where it's possible, that'll help to shelter those winter winds and help some of those buds to get through the winter. Because a lot of this is due to winter dieback as well. And the last handful of years has been cold.
All right, let's go to Susan in Kingston. Susan, you're on.
Yes, hello. I have a couple questions. One, I have a houseplant that's an African, purple passion.
Okay.
And every 5 years I have to replace one, and they're hard to find. And it's like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
You know, the ones I've...
I had to put them all up because they were dying, and I stuck them in a glass of water, and they're doing pretty good right now.
Yeah, sometimes root rot will get those purple passion plants.
Root rot?
Root rot. Yep, it'll actually, sometimes it's easy to overwater houseplants.
It also seems to be a magnet for mealybug.
It does seem to be a magnet for mealybug, too. And that'd be little white critters that you'd see on the leaves. So if you don't see that and it's just kind of a general decline, it could be that actually the roots are starting to rot on that plant. And one way to, in future, help keep it growing longer without getting this problem is let it make sure it's drying out thoroughly between waterings.
I would also suggest periodically taking some rooting some cuttings. This is in that African violet family.
Start over.
They just get long and kind of woody at the base, and that can easily rot even if it is sort of dry. I mean, they get a little funky, as they say. So taking some cuttings, rerooting cuttings, that way the mother plant can be sort of cast aside. You have some nice young new babies to take it over.
Yep. All right. Easy plant to root. Cool plant.
Let's go on over to, didn't work. Line 9 and Renee in Red Hook. Renee, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a number of perennials that I was either given or purchased over the summer, and I don't think I'm going to get a chance to plant them in the ground before winter. And I was wondering what is the best way to store them, you know, keep them outside to protect them so they don't die.
Well, can you plant them pot and all? Yeah. Can you just stick them in like a holding bed and just plant them container and all?
Oh yeah, I was gonna ask you that. Make a temporary bed for them.
Yep, water them in. Just keep make a holding bed. Stick the containers and all right in there. Make sure that they're down below ground. Because otherwise they're going to freeze off a little bit of surface mulch.
You can put them in an unheated structure, but I think getting them in the ground would probably be better.
I think.
So make sure the top of the soil in the pot is slightly below the ground level?
No, make sure it's at ground level. In other words, don't leave the container sticking up out of the ground. Don't just bury half of it, because then the upper half of that root system is vulnerable, unless you wanted to try to mulch up around all the containers, which would also help.
And the containers there, as Fred is suggesting, just so you can easily identify it and find it again. You don't need that container.
Yeah.
You'll be able to lift those plants if you feel comfortable knowing what they are and replant them in the spring. You'll have lots of time to do that.
There you go.
Lift the ones that I haven't killed because I didn't water them in the past 2 months.
Yeah, well, if they're dead now, I wouldn't plant them.
Of course.
Them.
Yeah. Of course.
Well, thanks, Renee.
All right.
But, that works really well. You got it.
All right. Let's see here. Who's been waiting longest? Okay. Sheila in Heath. Sheila, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have a question about oriental grasses, pampas grass, I guess you might call them, too. When is the best time to cut them back? I have done them in the spring, and I also have done them in the fall, early fall, actually.
It's up to you.
I got about 50 of them, so it's a big job for me.
There's no as soon as you're done with them, you know, fall, winter, spring, you cut them back. The only trick with later spring is, you know, they could have fallen over onto other things. So I usually like to get them out of there by, if I don't get them out of there by November, I get them out of there in, you know, 1st of April.
Yeah, we usually leave them at the arboretum, grasses, ornamental grasses, because there's winter interest. So
yeah, they're
kind of
pretty
in the
wintertime.
They're pretty
sometimes. In the
wintertime. Yep. So typically very early spring before they have a chance to fall over or begin to grow.
There you go.
Now, is it too early to, do I wait until they turn brown, or can I cut them when they're still green?
You can cut them if
I got a lot of them
green, but this is the best time of year to enjoy them, so we probably would
exactly.
suggest waiting
You're
a little
right.
longer.
And they'll be brown by the spring, of course, when you get ready, if you chose to cut them then.
Well, I got a lot of the zebra ones, and they're so large that they're down on the ground now, so anyways, okay, then I can wait until another few more weeks before I chop them down.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheila. We appreciate it. Over to Bill in Westerlo. Bill, you're on.
Yeah, hi. My question is about trees I've planted probably about 10 years ago, evergreens, like pine trees, along the road, maybe 15 feet back. And, of course, the road salt is getting to the bottom of the trees. Is that systemic from the soil? Is that splash mostly? The tops look great. Another part of the question is, what other trees are there that I can plant that are a little bit tougher when it comes to that road salt? I'm in the hill towns, and they use a lot of salt up here. And let me also just add one more piece to this is there anything I can put on my existing trees now to protect them? Somebody told me neem oil was kind of pricey, and I don't want to just take a shot in the dark with it.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear a professional opinion.
Okay.
That's about it.
Start from the back and go forward. Protect them from what? What are you concerned with? Is this just the salt?
Yeah, road salt.
Okay. No, I don't know that neem is going to help them with the salt.
So.
A burlap screen or some, you know, kind of snow fence screen that's going to keep that salt
it's
slurry
physically
from
keeping that salt off the leaves
would
off
be
the
helpful.
Needles. Yeah.
Yep. There's two real big problems with salt. One of them is salt in the root zone, and some trees don't tolerate it. And then the other problem with salt is that it gets on the foliage or needles and it burns it, but it doesn't actually, you have to kill the tree. So it sort of depends on, you know, what you're going after. It's going to be easier though to, as a screen, like these guys said, I think,
and
to try to
and the native eastern white cedar, Thuja occidentalis, are often referred to as arborvitae, but the eastern form is on its own, the true species, sometimes referred to also as dark American arborvitae, is pretty salt tolerant.
The white pine is one of the worst.
Yeah, and hemlock as
really
well. Don't
hemlock
plant
and
white pine or hemlock.
And,
yep.
And
spruces are usually a little better.
Spruces are generally better.
White spruce, Norway spruce are also more salt.
Agreed.
All right, Bill, thank you so much. Over to Nicole in Nassau. Nicole, you're on. Hello, Nicole. Goodbye. I'm sorry, Nicole. You waited all that time. All right, very quickly here, over to Jeremy in Chatham. Jeremy.
Okay, something ate the top of my carrots, which are planted in raised bed 16 inches high in enclosed deer fence, secured perimeter. So unlikely it's a woodchuck or anything, but does thing that flies actually eat, can do that?
I mean, you would look at the ends of the stalks or the leaves and see that it was something
chopped,
you know, chewed with teeth. Somebody had teeth, which is probably what it was. So you've got, as you said, you got woodchucks. You got deer not going to make it in there, but you got woodchucks, rabbits, voles, chipmunks maybe, but mostly the
woodchucks will climb
latitude.
A fence pretty easily.
Yep. And if you've seen no evidence of anything getting over, then that must mean that it's probably the smaller guys, which is like a vole. Voles are really ruthless.
And
when
if
it comes
you
to
are using the page wire, which is like a 3 by 2 inch hole, baby rabbits can fit through there.
You got a bad connection. Jeremy, you got a bad connection there, bud. I'll tell you what, we'll just have these guys finish up here, try to answer the question without input from Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're pretty well done with it. It's some little mammal.
Probably most likely vole, or there's an infiltration that he hasn't spotted yet, like a
it's
larger
critter. It's not usually
critter,
chipmunks
like
or squirrels eating the greens.
No, I wouldn't think so.
He had a good way of describing it, though. He had a secured perimeter. I mean, he had guns on there. Well, you know.
We all need a secure perimeter around our vegetable gardens.
Yep. And depending on what a secure perimeter is, I would encourage him, if he hasn't already done this, using smaller grid to stop some of the smaller guys.
And how far down would you put the grid?
If he got it down 6 inches, he'd be in good shape.
Yeah. Nothing will go beneath that?
They usually start the tunnel and they hit metal. And
Luckily, they're not smart enough to know you only put it down 6 inches.
Let's try to see if they're 8 or 9. They don't test it.
Okay.
2-3 inches, and usually you're all right.
You can always put a line of electric around it, too.
All right, Bob. Then that's where we'll end the show. Well done.
Razor wire.
Bob Graves, we'll think about having you back. Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery. Nice to have you guys here today. Support comes from George Heigl, Cowan's representative, available for estate trust and full collection evaluations and consultations in the Capital Region, 518-396-7974. Real Seafood Company, Wolf Road Colony, locally owned seafood restaurant at Raw Bar, realseafoodco.com. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting Smoky Bear Day on October 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring games and information on using prescribed fire to keep the pine bush healthy, albanypinebush.org. And Union College Concert Series, opening its 2016-2017 season with the Brentano String Quartet, performing works of Haydn and Mendelssohn for its annual fall benefit, Saturday, October 1st, 5 p.m., unionconcertsconcerts.org. Thanks again to the gardening guys for being here. There'll be another one in October, I am told. I'll have to check the big book and confirm that. Zach Malloy gathering no moss at the controls today. Thanks to Deb Malik for answering the phones. And I'm the producer of this travesty. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow it's a Food Friday. Stand by for news.